This is KCBX, Central Coast Public Radio, here on NPR One.
Here we are in Edna Valley with Mike Seiner, and your company is?
Seiner La Valley Wine Company.
Mike, you go way back into the prehistoric days of winemaking in the California Central Coast.
91, 92 is my first vintage here in the Edna Valley.
You were Cal Poly when?
I was in Cal Poly about 90 through 94. Okay. That's my time here.
Right, so you're a puppy, but still, the olden days in Central Coast winemaking.
For sure. At that time, we had about five wineries in the Edna Valley and about 14 wineries in Paso Robles at the time.
And game changer today you have?
Today, Paso Robles is north of 300 wineries. Edna, Arroyo Grande, Slow Wine Country, we've got about 30.
Talk to us about your operation here and what you do. Do you grow all estate-grown grapes, or do you source from wherever is fair game?
Yeah, so for our company, Seiner La Valley, we're 100% estate-grown fruit. So my wife and I were able to buy a vineyard in Avila Beach. Our ranch is about 1.2 miles from the ocean, and there we grow 30 acres of grapes, and wow, that's what we make for our company.
What does best out there?
You know, Pinot Noir is definitely what we've kind of been known for since we started the company back in 1997. But we do Chardonnay, Syrah, we do Pinot Gris, a little bit of Albarino, and I just put some new Grenache in. We're going to get this year, calendar year vintage of 2018, we'll get our first crop.
Talk to us about processing, picking, and how you determine when and what.
It's really about feel. You know, we do look at some numbers, chemistries, but I've spent a lot of time in the fields. I'm tasting the fruit and relying upon my instinct and experience to say when to pick.
So taste and instinct rules and numbers just confirm what you did?
Exactly. And then just looking at the vine itself. I mean, you can pick up just a matter of clues from the vine when you see it.
With the leaf.
Yeah. The leaf, how it angles of the leaf from the rachises to the lignification of the stems and stuff. All that, there is a lot of things to look at that can help you understand where it's at.
Talk to us about philosophy of growing / organic and that purist approach and why you do what you do there.
Yeah, you know, traveling around the world, my wife and I got married in Burgundy in 96, and I've spent a fair amount of time in Europe in Burgundy learning from people. I worked for Robert Mondavi. Around the world, when I met some of the best winemakers of the world, they tended to focus on the vineyards, and they tended to be organic, biodynamic practitioners. So literally, that's where it got to me, why I started delving in those philosophies and training, because those people, I love their wines, and I wanted to be like that when I grew up, so that's what brought me to it.
From a blind standpoint, can you tell the difference, whether it's organic or not?
You know, from a wine itself, yeah, I mean, I don't know. I mean, again, I'm not a super taster. I'm not a master sommelier. I'm just a small business owner, farmer. But I have seen over time, though, that wines are just a little more complex. There is that, say, je ne sais quoi, right? There's that, and very often those farming practices has that. So, yeah, I know it makes a big difference in the wine.
Here we are. This is your winery. This is where you do all of your processing.
This is. You know, I actually rent space here. We're currently sitting here at a company called Center of Effort in the Edna Valley, and we rent about 2,000 square foot of space within which to create our wines.
And how about retail, and how would somebody come and experience your wine?
Certainly. We've got a small tasting room in Avila Beach, one block from the ocean, 550 First Street in Avila Beach, California. And we're open 5 days a week. And yeah, we're there to pour some wines and share our story.
I'm sure you've got a wine club.
We do. We're still a pretty small winery. We're less than 2,000 cases for Seiner La Valley. Plus, we've been in the game since 97. And we've got some great accolades. So, yeah, we have a good, strong wine club, and most of our wines are sold directly, but we're also distributed in California with Henry Wine Group. You will find our wines all over California in small, select shops and restaurants.
Okay, let's go back in time and the bigger picture and what made you who you are today outside of Europe in your time there was being embedded in Edna Valley in the county. So talk about some of the early iterations and where your eyes were opened and why and how.
I just had to work a lot. That's kind of where I came from in the San Joaquin Valley. And so I got here with no wine background. And then a friend of mine said, hey, we're hiring in a tasting room at the old Corbett Canyon Winery.
Were you still at Cal Poly at that time?
I just got to Cal Poly. I was there.
And were you an ag major?
I was industrial technology. I wanted to teach shop class. I wanted to teach high school metal shop.
Oh, the guys with three fake.
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly right. My father had an auto dismantling yard in the valley, and I grew up very physical, and that's what I wanted to do, but I had to work. So a friend of mine got me an interview at Corbett Canyon Winery, and within a month, I just realized how great this business was, how the local scene was just amazing.
I need to interrupt for a moment because younger people don't even know what Corbett Canyon Winery was or that it was. What put San Luis Obispo County on the map for a lot of people around the country back in the day?
Oh, without a doubt. There's a lot of famous winemakers in California that worked here. You know, in charge of winemaking, but Justin Winery worked here, Cambria Winery, Farniente is up there. You know, I mean, it was a bigger winery. It's distributed in every state in the country, and it was just a kind of an anchor for the valley.
And it had national ads.
Oh, it
on
did.
TV.
Oh,
okay, go there. See if you can do it.
Canyon. Yeah, everybody remembers
the
that
echo,
stuff.
The Echo, yeah.
The Echo. That was an amazing. In fact, that's still taught in certain marketing books I've heard because it was such an impactful campaign, and it helped the company just grow to huge levels.
When what happened? Did it implode? Why?
No. It's still owned by the Wine Group. So they're the third largest producer of wine in this country. But most of their fruit comes from the San Joaquin Valley.
Back in the day, again, I mean, this is a place where you'd come to the tasting room and whatnot for Corbett Canyon Winery. It doesn't have that local presence anymore.
No, Corbett does not anymore. A lot of the wines, like I said, come from the San Joaquin Valley or from Chile or wherever they can get it from. It's a big bulk. The wine's just a good everyday wine still.
Grocery store wine.
It's a grocery store wine. And probably 10 to 12 countries in every state in our country.
Interesting, huh? And it all started right here.
It did. And that's how I first got in. But to your question about where I found my direction, really was the small players here. Saucito Canyon, the Greeno family.
So you worked with Tom, the son?
I used to babysit Tom, actually. Yeah, I did. So that was part of my background here. I worked for six wineries in the Edna Valley, and Tom and Margaret were pretty young back in the day, and Bill and Nancy asked me to babysit them. I said, sure, and I house-sit for them. But I saw Claiborne and Churchill. I saw Celestial Canyon, Pierre de Creek, Romeo, and Margaret. And I thought, what a wonderful lifestyle. I want to do this, and I've dedicated myself to do it ever since.
Talk a little bit about organic and being an environmental steward. This is something that you don't have to do, but you choose to do.
Certainly. You know, it's something that I've been working on for a long time, and it really goes back to making wines of place. You know, that's really the reason for being, is make wine that speaks of place. And so when you use less chemicals, it has a better resulting of speaking of place. And so that's what brought me to organic and biodynamic farming. And so as we sit here today, right here, we're looking at this pumice. This is Pinot Noir that we just shoveled out of the tank today. I've got it in my trailer right here in front of us. And we're going to drive that back to the vineyard and make our own compost pile and eventually integrate that back into the field.
Let's talk about yeast. For a moment, there are some that do 100% native yeast that don't add any. There are others that won't go there and add yeast to every single batch.
I'm about half native fermentation. So for me, yeast is an interesting aspect to winemaking. But for me, the overriding philosophy is to make the wine as complex as possible, as early as possible. Mm-hmm. So one of my ways of doing that is changing up the yeast protocol.
So you're manipulating and tweaking the taste profile then?
Without a doubt. We just harvested five fermenters yesterday. Those five fermenters, three are going to be native, and two of them are going to be two different yeasts.
Oh, so it'd be neat to do some side-by-side, huh?
And that's what we do. Again, it's making the wine as complex as possible, as early as possible. Native always gives me a richness and a texture and this kind of earthy flavor that really attracts me. But I like using Osmanhausen as one of my main yeasts for Pinot Noir out of Switzerland, and it does a really nice fruity character to the wine. And then we're going to come back later, and I'll blend my wines to what I like.
Let's go back to your early days, Cal Poly.
You came.
What did you learn? Was it worth going to Cal Poly? What did you walk away with that was the most beneficial?
You know, yeah, I learned a lot of Cal. I loved going to school there. I thought it was a wonderful school. I thought they imparted into me and my friends a little more of a humbleness and realized that, hey, look, school brings you vocabulary, but it doesn't teach you how to do it. You don't graduate a doctor or a teacher.
Right.
You graduate now you have the basics of how to learn. And that was taught through us, I think, driven through us. I think it was really great. And so I love that.
Learn by doing was a part of the program in the day.
Without a doubt. And so, and having six part-time jobs going through Cal Poly was definitely my learn by doing and wine. And but I decided to stick it out. There was a time I thought about going back to Fresno and but
Fresno State.
Fresno State, who has a wonderful program. Cal Poly at the time did not have a program here. So,
are you involved in embedded with Cal Poly's viticulture and viniculture program?
I do. I help out all I can. They call on me and the company, you know, Ancient Peaks, myself, and we will always help out when we can. It's been exciting to see this grow, and it, in particular, seeing very famous families, Fetzers, Gallows, seeing
Jay Lohr,
you know, Randy Dunn's daughter. They go to Cal Poly. You know, they could go to Davis and Fresno. Right. Very exciting. As we sit here on the crush pad, three young people just walked by, and they're all Cal Poly kids, interns. They're already talking about it, the new winery. They call it the new winery, and so it is exciting to see that.
We make a wine called Ancestral, and you spoke about the technique called Method Champenois. That's the classic method making champagne. This technique that we're employing is called Method Ancestral. So this is how sparkling wine was made before Dom Perignon. So what we do is we harvest very early, like champagne. My finished alcohol is about 9 to 10%. I harvest early, it's Pinot Noir. I press it, and I bottle it about 2 weeks after I harvest it. It's finished.
And it's ready to drink.
And it's ready, it has to ferment in that bottle. I never added any yeast. I never added any SO2. No riddling, it's cloudy. And so, but I like to sit them outside and get them nice and warmed up. And we generally release that wine about a month after we bottle it. It's more like a cider than it is a wine.
What's the bubbly character?
You know, it's champagne's little cousin, you know, crazy little cousin is what it is. So you don't get the fine bubbles. It's not a refined taste. It's more of a bottle-conditioned cider is what it is. There's solids and there's turbidity in the liquid in the wine, but it's fun. It's super high in acidity. It's super low in alcohol. It's a fun, it's not a serious wine. And so the French would say the wine, when they look at it and say, hey, is a Petrillon Natural. And so the hipsters in California call it Pet Nat. So we started experimenting in the 15 vintage. At that time, I knew of about three in California. Now it is becoming, I bet there's at least 15, and it's a very right now experience. Back to your question about cash flow and owning a vineyard, it's important to get something to the market soon, and it's a perfect wine to do that.
Quick turnaround.
It is, you know, it's a game changer. Beer, right? You get on the phone and you call the hops and you call the barley and call everybody and they bring it in and they make it. It's vodka's the same way. We have one time a year to get our raw product, and that's generally a 2 or 3 year lag time. Suddenly I'm in market 3 months after I harvested. It works really well. Fun to find new stuff. For us, I think that's been one of our, it's a porch pounder. Tom, by all means, man. When it's summertime and it's a warm day, they're fun wines. Again, 9% alcohol. It's not sit around and contemplate world philosophies. It's enjoy it and have a nice lunch, get back to work.
Thanks for visiting, Mike. What a pleasure. It's always a joy to visit with somebody with such passion for the grape.
Thank you, Tom. I really appreciate it and appreciate coming out and seeing vintage.
If somebody wanted to learn more about you, once again, name of your winery and a website.
The company is called Signor La Valle, and you can go to SINORLAVALLEE.com is our website, or just go to Google. Mike Signor Winemaker does pretty well. My mom loves that.
All right, thanks, Mom. I'm Tom Wilmer reporting from Edna Valley, California.
You've been listening to the Lowell Thomas award-winning travel show Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer, a featured podcast on NPR.org's podcast directory. Produced by California Central Coast NPR affiliate KCBX. You are invited to subscribe to Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer on NPR.org, NPR One, iTunes, Stitcher.com, and more than 20 other podcast channels around the world. To learn more about Tom Wilmer's journeys around America and the world, log on to thomaswilmer.com.
Underwriting support for Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer is provided in part by the Society of St. Vincent de Paul. People often associate the Society of St. Vincent de Paul with thrift stores. Donations like clothing, your gently used couch, or still serviceable washing machine generate funds to assist the Society in putting food on the table for people in need, or keeping the lights on and families in their homes. To find a St. Vincent de Paul thrift store in your area, visit svdpusa.org. Once again, svdpusa.org. And whether you're shopping for new or used items, donating them, or volunteering, you're helping the Society of St. Vincent de Paul help others.